If you were to use one word or two, what would you say is one of the prominent themes, lessons, observations? Now, I know that's a broad question, so you probably don't have any idea what I have in mind. That we learn in the book of Joshua. What's necessary? Hey, now I got it. Faith.
Amen.
Ted.
Better do things God's way.
Better what?
Better do things God's way.
Better do things God's way, yes. I've got some echo here. Let's see if that one's on. This one's off over here. Better do things God's way. And what do you do before you do something? Yeah, you think about it. Inquire of God. What's His will? What has He said? And then when you know what He said, then you can do it God's way. All right? Okay. That was the wrong way. We're in that section of Joshua where it just gets tedious to read. This part of the land is here to here, naming city after city after city. But there is an importance in that in one way. We are using this as an outline, more or less, and I handed out years ago. We're in this section here where they're dividing the spoil, phase one, phase two, phase three, and so on. And we're in chapter 13 through 18. And so here's chapters 13 through 17, 18 over here. And the giving of the land, or dividing of the land, however you want to put it, Reuben, Gad, Caleb, Judah, Ephraim, Manasseh, Simeon, Zebulun, Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, Dan, and Joshua. Okay. So maps like this are not exact, but if you go to some of the chapters where it talks about that God gave the land to this person or these tribes and this tribe and so on, then this is how these maps get made. Let's see if we can turn to Joshua the 15th chapter. I believe that's the one I want. Could even go back to the 13th. But while you're turning, go ahead into the 15th. Of course, as I said, you could go back to the 13th chapter. That's where the land is still to be conquered, and then the inheritance east of the Jordan, and then the inheritance west of the Jordan in chapter 14, and Caleb's request and inheritance in chapter 14. And then in chapter 15, we're going to read just a few verses here, not very far. It says, "The allotment for the tribe of the people of Judah, according to their clans, reached southward to the boundary of Edom." So what do you start here? Here's Judah's territory. So it reached southward to the boundary of the Edomites. Okay, this brownish color here is Judah's portion. And that's how whoever drew this map drew it this way, because that's what that first verse says. It was reached southward to the boundary of Edom, to the wilderness of Zin at the further south, and the wilderness of Zin is not on this map, but it'll be down here, and their south boundary ran from the end of the Salt Sea, from the bay that faces southward. Where's the end of the Salt Sea? Right here. So it went from there down, and it goes out southward of the ascent of Akrabim, passes along Zin, that's down here at the bottom, and goes up south to Kadesh Barnea, along Hezron, up to Adar, and turns to Karka. And it passes along Amzon. Now, most of these names are not on this map. Then let's see, where did I leave off? And it passes along to Amzon, goes by the brook of Egypt, and comes to its end at the sea. This shall be your south boundary. So it goes by here, wherever this last, that last phrase, Amzon, I guess it is, and goes by the brook of Egypt. Where's the brook of Egypt? Is that the Nile River?
No.
That was a positive no, wasn't it? And he's right. It's right here. This is the brook of Egypt. Egypt's all way down here, all way off the map. Nile River runs over there, Suez Canal, etc. This is the brook of Egypt right here. Now, most of the time, it's not got any water in it, except during the rainy season. You'll see some other brooks. You can barely see that one there. But there's several that come into this side from the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. And I don't know why I got onto this, except that if you wanted to go from the Mediterranean Sea over to the highlands here in the middle, you'd go up one of those brooks. That's the easiest way to go because they're dry most of the time. Otherwise, you'd have to climb over some hills and mountains and so on. Anyway, the point I was making with the reading of those verses is that's how these maps were made. And as I said, you'll find, I don't know how many maps I've looked at, and they're not all exactly exact. But we get a general idea, and by having it in color like this, we can get a general idea of where, and it's pretty good. We read those verses there, and it said from here, the south end of the Dead Sea, down to here, back up here, and so on. Actually, the Philistines are included in Judah's territory also. But anyway, there is a very important city here that I want to point out, even before we get it in lesson 19. The last number 5 on the second page of 19 talks about Shiloh. And I wanted to point it out while I have this map up here, that Shiloh is right there. And so what territory, what tribe is Shiloh, what tribe's territory is Shiloh located in?
Ephraim.
You can see Ephraim there maybe. All right, Shiloh is a very important place because the Ark of the Covenant is going to be brought there. They're going to have a place of burnt offering. And for over 300 years, the Ark of the Covenant is going to be there because the tabernacle is a tent that they can move around. And not until Solomon's time will the temple be built. So from about 390 to about 1094, the Ark of the Covenant remains in Shiloh. And then about 930, that's when Solomon became king, is during his reign that the Ark of the Covenant was moved to the temple in Jerusalem. But all during this time, from now through the Judges, and even through David's time, the Ark of the Covenant with the tabernacle was to be there in Shiloh. For those of you, go ahead, Mo.
The Ark of the Covenant was taken by the Philistines during the time of Eli,
mm-hmm.
and it stayed in a threshing floor until Solomon built the temple or until David decided to move it. And then it came to rest somewhere else because of Uzzah and the trouble that David got into with that, moving the Ark without.
Right. My saying it was there until the time of Solomon was going to be qualified exactly what Mo said. Okay? So there was a time when it was stolen, and there was a time when it was brought back, and that goes through all the rigmarole of getting on a cart and doing it correctly. And there's a guy that touched the ark and so on, and God killed him. You remember all that? I didn't mention that. That was my aside here, and Mo filled it in for us, okay? So, now, some of you may have, I didn't go and look and see if anybody looked at it on Facebook this morning, But I put a post on Facebook that has a video, an aerial video of Shiloh as it looks today. And mainly I put it there. Now, there is a synagogue or a temple of sorts, I guess it's a synagogue, where Jews have built this modern-looking building on top of the Mound of Shiloh. But I put it on there so you could kind of get the topographical view of it. There's a photo that was taken back in 2013, rather. And this right here is the ruins where the Ark of the Covenant and the sacrifices were made. They're still, and it doesn't look like that today. As I said, this is 2013, so that's 5 years ago. But they've doing a lot of excavating there in the last few years. But that video, if you want to go on Facebook and have the means to find it, shows what it looks like better than this does today. And as I said, just to get an idea of the topography of the land around Shiloh. There's something about this map is the reason I put it up there. You know, while we're looking at maps, I've forgotten where it is. Shiloh's, by the way, is not on this map. I don't know. It would be here in Ephraim. This map goes down further. Here's the river of Egypt there. But I've put it on for some other reason, too. You can see that it's a little bit, in graphics, a little bit different than this other map. Oh, while we're there, I'll tell you. Next week, we're going to talk about the cities of refuge, and there's going to be six of them. We won't get there today. Kadesh, Shechem, Hebron, Bezer, Ramoth, and Golan. Cities of refuge. I just put that on there because I thought I might use it later, but I'm not probably get it to it today. So, any question, any comment about what we've said so far? So, it takes faith. And we're going to find in our lesson today, our lesson sheet 19, that these people, even though they've got one of the most faithful, shall we say, leaders in Joshua, there's some of them are still a little bit like they were in, their parents or grandparents in the wilderness, a little hesitant to do some things because of lack of faith, if you can put it that way. Okay, any thought or question about any of what we've looked at there? Yes, Mitch.
I have a question. You got Simeon that's within Judah.
Yes.
No,
it's not really, but Simeon is very, well, in a sense, is almost swallowed up by Judah. It was so few, all those, really, in the numbering of them, it's not all that small. But I don't know how to explain it. Somebody help me here. It was just that they were given this portion of the land. Judah was given that around it, and Simeon was kind of, as I said, swallowed up. They just almost never heard of again in one sense.
He was a brother. He was one of the
brothers. Yeah, yes.
He had a lot of descendants.
Yes.
But just the placement there is surrounded by Judah's.
Kind of odd. Mo, or was it? No, it's Ted's hand. I saw hand right back there.
Yeah, on that number 5 on the second page.
Yep. There was no dispute. Is this? They were lax in doing what they should have done. And so what happened here? What? The what? Okay, we're on number 5 on the back of lesson 19. While we're talking about it, we'll just go there. Now that the land has been secured, and remind me, I want to say something about that word. The tabernacle is erected in Shiloh, a more central location, Joshua 18:1. The ark will remain in Shiloh until it is captured by the Philistines in the days of Eli. Moe's point. Although the land has been divided by lot, Joshua rebukes seven remaining tribes for not taking greater initiative in requesting their inheritance. Joshua 18:2-10. They were instructed to send out three surveyors from every tribe and chart the land in seven parts by cities. Joshua then cast lots for the division of the land. So, what's your question, Ted?
What,
I think if I heard Ted, what would be their reason for not showing any initiative?
Yeah.
For laxity?
They didn't like what they were getting? Or
doesn't indicate that, does it?
We don't know.
We would...
Lazy.
Pardon me?
Sounds like they were lazy.
That's the only answer I know. That's possible, along with Laverne. Steve?
I'm thinking that possibly they, since some of them didn't drive the Canaanites, maybe they were afraid they were going to be deceived by them.
So it could have had something to do with the Canaanites that were still in the land? Is I summing up a little bit what you were saying, Steve?
Yeah. No fear.
Yeah. Taylor? Okay, what chapter and in Genesis was he reading from?
49.
In 49. And so this, God knew what was going to happen. That didn't make them do it, but he knew what was going to happen. Genesis 49 was where Taylor was reading from there. And so there's mentioned there that something like this of what we're talking about, according to what Taylor is reading there, would happen. What verse did you begin with there in 49, Taylor?
Verse 5. He talks about Simeon and how he's swollen.
Oh. Okay.
He says, I'll disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. And I thought it was interesting based on what you said, how they were swallowed up and never heard
them again. All right. This chapter in Genesis 49 is when Jacob blesses his sons before he died. And verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brothers, weapons of violence are their swords. Let my soul come, not come to their counsel, O my Lord, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Kill, et cetera. I was looking at some of more of what you read there. You skip down to what was the verses you read later in that chapter, Taylor?
14.
Issachar is a strong donkey crouching between sheep folds. He saw that a resting place was good and that the land was pleasant, so he bowed his shoulder to bear and became a servant at forced labor. I'm not seeing somewhere there, Taylor, where they didn't take the land like they should have.
No, I'm just... It's just interesting that back in Genesis, Jacob has already he's talked about where these people are going to be.
Okay.
So Zebulun will dwell by the seashore.
Okay.
Dan shall just be where he was before. As for Gad, the raiders shall raid him. He will raid there. He will look where Gad's place.
Okay. I'm sorry. I always thought you were talking about why they didn't take the land rather than this is how the land. Okay. Yes. Good point there, Taylor, that it had already been said by Jacob when he blessed his son that they would take the land, and this is the division of the land or whatever. That's Genesis 14, 15 rather. No, I'm in Joshua. I was looking at the wrong chapter. Okay, go ahead, Joyce. I'm not Joyce. I pointed to Mary. Mary over here pointed to Kay over here and said Joyce. Yeah. Seven of them were fiddling around. Fiddled while Rome burned. Okay. was there anything else? Go ahead, Ken.
Yes, since those seven were done by Lot, who was it that made the designation? It was God. And that would agree exactly with what Jacob said, because that was God.
Usually, that's a good point, Ken, that it was by lot. But usually in the word, by lot, when the children of God, whether it was the Israelites or in the New Testament, where it was saints and disciples of Christ, by lot they would cast it and God would make the decision. No, he doesn't do that when you go to the casino. What's your name now, Larry?
I got a question for you.
Okay.
Shiloh and Manasseh is the site of the Civil War battle.
Yep.
Between the states. Mm-hmm. How did they ever get the names over here in the United States from these names?
People here in the when they settled this country, they knew their Bible. There's, yes, Joyce. This is Joyce over here, and that's Kay.
You're getting yourself deeper.
there's Shiloh, Tennessee. I don't think that is what the battle that Larry's talking about was there, but may have been. Oh, there was a big battle there. Okay. I wasn't sure if that was the one Larry was talking about. There's a lot of names in the United States that come from biblical. And right now my mind's blank as to give you an example of that other than Shiloh.
Philadelphia,
yeah. There, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Okay. All right. That's your assignment sometime, to name all the names in the country. They got biblical names. Okay. Now, in number five here where we were reading, it says, now that the land has been secured. And there's another place where it says conquered, and I thought I'd circle that. Anyway, is the land secured? There's still some people who are Canaanites and idolaters. Is that a contradiction to what is said here? Another word is conquest, the conquest. Number six, it says, why might the conquest of this area appear overwhelming? Did they conquested the land? Did they secure the land? There's a seeming contradiction there. If there's still Philistines as over there when David killed Goliath, if there's still Canaanites in the land, then it sounds like they didn't secure it, that they didn't conquer it, that God didn't give it to them. And there's a point here on this outline that has to do with premillennialism that we talked about a few weeks ago. Did they secure the land? One thing that gets us all mixed up is that we think of the United States, 50 states, all under one umbrella of the Constitution. But that's not the way these Canaanites were. And as it mentions there at the bottom, let's see, get it here, at the bottom of the first page, number 6, the conquest of this area might appear overwhelming. It's asking a question. Because there were so many cities. But those cities were not usually aligned. There was a city king. Now, there was 5 kings that fought up at Hazor, the waters of Merom. And sometimes those kings would fight against each other. So when they went in and they fought battles, they took a territory, they defeated the 5 kings up there in the northern part. The Israelites, I'm asking a question now, the Israelites controlled the area. And in that sense, they secured it. They conquered it. Question. Does that make sense? Go ahead, Steve.
Well, for example, I mean, they didn't drive Canaanites out, but like Ephraim, they enforced laborers now. So they didn't drive them out, but they were definitely controlled.
They did that a lot. And that was one example that in our lesson here that they may not have driven all them out. Oh, that was another question. But they made these people forced laborers. That's another question that came to mind while I got it there. Let me say this. They didn't drive them out, and that's a word that's in the scriptures. But were they to drive them? Yeah, right up here at the top of page 2. Under 4, the land of Ephraim. The Ephraimites failed, that's the tribe of Ephraim, failed to drive out the inhabitants of Gezer. And the tribe of Manasseh and the half-tribe west of the Jordan also fall short in ridding some of their northern cities of Canaanites. In this 17th chapter, both made slave laborers of the Canaanites. Quote, but they did not utterly drive them out as God commanded. Pardon me?
I think it came back to bite them.
Oh, it did, yes. But were they told to drive them out or were they told to kill them all? That would be driving them out, wouldn't it? So I thought about that and I said, well, God didn't say drive them out. But there in Joshua 17:11. Through 13, they did not utterly drive them out as God commanded. Is there a contradiction there? God didn't tell them to drive them out, but he told them to slaughter them. Ken?
As we look at these, that the division that's made there, and think of it as a picture of what is to come yet in God's eternal purpose. These different tribes, various enemies, being whatever area they were in, they had various enemies. We as spiritual pilgrims have various enemies. Have we driven out spiritually with each one of us while we're still in the flesh? Have we driven out all of the enemies that are available against us? And the answer is only Christ. So
and
if we're not in Christ, no, we haven't driven them out.
And what Ken's talking about is number 9 on the sheet here. Discuss the concept of driving out most of the Canaanites but leaving some alive. What spiritual application can you make for this to the life of a Christian? Ken just made it. Any other thoughts? We as individuals have things that we still have to fight, temptations and so on. But we continually, what does Paul say in Ephesians 6? Put on the whole armor of God and stand fast. Ken? Yeah.
I think that kind of nails it for us because we are the Levites
Yeah.
And so we're different than the tribes that were assigned land and having all the possessions and all that.
Yeah. Right. I don't have Bible Acts number 8 up here, but we gave it out last week, and if you didn't get one, there's some on the table back there. And so Ken is telling us that Bible Acts number 8 kind of nails what we're talking about here. I think we read it last week. I'm not sure if we did now. For the Levites had no portion among them, caused the priesthood of the Lord, and so on. And so this is talking about the Levites and the moral ecology. He says in that last paragraph, should spurn us too. Go ahead and get a copy of that if you didn't get it last week. We have Bible Bites number 9 to hand out today. But there are several lessons there that we've been trying to put forward, and Bible Bites does some of it, and some of it we've tried to do here in class. Do you have something else, Ken?
And then the difference in the inheritance. All of these had an inheritance. The Levites didn't.
Yep.
That's us.
Yeah.
The inheritance is in Christ.
That's right. And what is Ken said the Levites are us, so what are we?
Priests.
Priest. We're priests. We don't have a physical land inheritance. The Levites just had a city to live in, or cities to live in. I think there's 48 of them. But they didn't have an inheritance like we have here in these different colors. And we don't have a physical inheritance, contrary to the thinking of the premillennialist, but we have an eternal inheritance, spiritual, because we are spiritual Levites, priests. We offer sacrifices to God, not literal, et cetera, et cetera. There's the type and the antitype of the Old Testament to the New. Okay, Brian?
Are there any, since Ken brought up number 9 there, are there any spiritual applications back to that, to those 7 tribes who did not take greater initiative in requesting their inheritance? Kind of touched on that, but I...
Go ahead and touch some more on it.
I was wondering what the class thought about that.
Okay, we're wondering what the class thought about. Brian, say it again.
Underneath the tabernacle at Shiloh, he rebukes the remaining tribes for not taking greater initiative in their requesting their inheritance. Maybe I missed it, but I was wondering if there's any spiritual application there.
Can we be, I'm not sure I'm following Brian's thought here, but I think I am with this. Could we as Christians, as we as priests and today, we as followers, disciples of Christ, could we be less enthusiastic about our privileges in Christ? Taking hold of what? Complacency? Mm-hmm. Apathy?
I'm afraid we all kind of fall into that category occasionally.
We're getting to what you're thinking about, Brian? Go ahead, Wilma.
I didn't want to divert, but I guess I've been chewing on this, what it said about them saying, arise and go and take that inheritance. And then you go back to Judges. Over the years, Steve and I, we talked with a couple of family members. There's people in this world that are get-it-done people, and there's people in this world that just spin wheels, you know. And so, not placing judgment either, but these kind of people, maybe they had to be pushed to get it done. And as Christians, we can be the same thing. We can just sit back and kind of not get anything accomplished and just spin wheels, or we can get it done.
Okay, Joe, and then Brian again.
Well, I would just, on what is being said, I think a lot of people have the attitude, once saved, always saved, so I just sit back because I've done this part, so I'm safe, and I'm going to float on in, you know, and it doesn't work that way. But they have that mental attitude.
Okay, Brian?
Well, it's the interesting thing about faith. We have emphasized all the way through Joshua that who's going to give them the land? Jehovah. God's given them. It's God's power. God is defeating all of these Canaanites, and yet their part in the whole thing is their faith, which we started with in class today. It's they had to trust in God, because there's some things that would, like confronting Jericho or being defeated at Ai and facing these giants. There's a lot of things that would, and killing innocent babies time after time for 7 years, doing things that would take a lot of courage. That's why the Lord said to Joshua, take courage, I'm with you. Yeah. And so the faith part is them trusting in the Lord and then doing their little small part, really, compared to what the Lord's doing.
Yeah.
But it's being active, and I think Wilma's hitting it, it's being active in that faith.
If you're not active with your faith, what is it?
Yeah, dead.
Ken, you had your hand up, so we'll...
Yeah, these folks, the Joshuas and the Calebs and the Davids, and as we go down through, they were the ones that had faith. And they were described as righteous.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. There's a line of righteousness that starts with Abel, all the way back, where God will declare them righteous, and that was in lieu of what he knew was going to take place when Christ came and was going to pay the fare for it. And so Paul talks about faith, speaking of what we're looking at right here, the ones that have faith. Faith unto faith, and he combines them into one for the salvation of mankind. So it all fits. It's just that we have problems seeing how it fits.
Okay. We could, there's so many different ways we could go today, and our time's getting away from us. And Brian, did you have something else before I, okay, Wilma, and then I want to wrap it up here. Is that Joshua speaking there in Judges?
I'm not sure, but I just ran. Joshua ran me to Judges.
Right. The first few chapters of Judges still talking about some things with Joshua. Okay, good thoughts. Let me point out something. It's kind of a minor thing, but up there in number four, on this lesson sheet, it gives a reference to Joshua 17, but it doesn't mention the specific verse of verse 3 in chapter 17. And in that verse, it mentions the daughters of Zelophehad. You remember talking about them way back in Numbers? They didn't have their father didn't have any men as inheritance, so they were the ones, those four women, the daughters of Zelophehad, asked, what about our inheritance? Anyway, I just wanted to point out, we studied that way back in Numbers, but now in Joshua 17 it mentions it again. All right, if Brian wants to go ahead with some more on chapter lesson 19 next week, that's fine. I won't be here for the next 2 weeks, and so I'm going to hand out lesson 20. And if John, is your name John?
Yeah.
Boy, name's not coming. Not.
Hey you.
If No, I need my brain oiled up. Brian can continue to lesson 19 or lesson 20 as he chooses next week, however you want to do it. And I'll go ahead and hand out Bible Bites number 9 because lesson 20 gets into chapter 21, if I remember correctly. My tongue and my brain are not working together today. This is a, I don't know if I got two there or not. This is a starts out with Joshua 21, where no one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel failed. It all came to pass, Joshua 21. Now, lesson 19 had something to say about that. In number 4 of lesson 19, it says something about the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. The responsibility for this failure lies in a lack of faith and resolve of the people, not in some delayed fulfillment of God's promise as suggested by premillennialism. So lesson 19 does mention that. So thanks for your thoughts and your comments and your questions, and we'll let Brian take up with you next week.